You're listening to episode 57 of the Omni Gamers Club podcast with your hosts, Daniel Winter and Mark Uessa, featuring special guest Amanda Valeron. Let's get back to the main event. Let's go to Japan.
And I just hear the flight announcement going on. I think we're just about to touch down in Tokyo Narita Airport. We are talking, of course, about Let's Go to Japan. It's by designer Josh Wood. Erica Ward was one of the primary artists on there. There's lots of additional artists as well. And it's by publisher AEG. And this game just came out this year in 2024, I believe. Or was it late last year? I'm not sure.
Well, Kickstarter was a few months ago.
Yeah, there you go. So it's within that realm, a brand new-ish game. And Amanda, do you want to tell us what type of game is this?
Sure. So Let's Go to Japan is a game about planning a trip to Japan you're going to have a board with the 6 days that your trip is going to last. And on each of those trips, you're going to assign cards with which represent different activities that you're going to do on your trip. And the game takes place over about 45 minutes. It has a card drafting, a weird sort of spin on the Seven Wonders card drafting, which is interesting. And so the cards are going to have three important aspects. One of them is that the cards are either going to be for Tokyo or Kyoto. And then when you lay them down on the days, anytime you go from one city to the other, you're going to have to take a train, which, you know, is a boring part of any trip. So the more trains you take, the more points that costs you. Then the cards are also going to give you icons, which some of the icons are the types of activity you do, which are
like
going
food or shrines.
Yeah, getting food, nature, talking to people, which is an activity on its own. And then also at the bottom, every day you're going to finish the day with the highlight of the day. So every card has a highlight potentially at the bottom of the card, but only one card per day is going to trigger its highlight, which is an extra scoring condition that you're going to do. And so the game is a lot of drafting and of placing stuff, and then an extra stage at the end where we go through our trip and score it, usually by telling each other about our trips and recapping all of that and scoring it as we go, which I would say takes about half of the time of the game lasts. Half of the 45 minutes is just recapping your trips.
Yeah, there's this big feeling of sort of programming and executing the trip. Like going on the trip is actually only at the very end of the game, and like you're executing what you've sort of created over the course of it. And the game does actually encourage you to narrate what you're doing thematically and talk everyone through your day and describe what you're doing and where you're going, which is a nice touch.
Yeah. I think that part of the game, the concept, I guess, the theme maybe is one of the most like impactful or spot on, because whenever you plan any long trip, it doesn't have to be to Japan, anything that's over, you know, a week or so, like at least for me and my family, planning the trip and what you do is like more than half of the fun, because you spend potentially weeks before going on the trip.
And it's all this potential of all the possible things you could be doing. Yeah. And
putting it together, right? Everyone's got their wish list, especially with kids. We encourage our kids to tell us, you know, what is your must do, right? Make sure you add it to the list and we'll slot it in. And of course, I've done this with my wife, like probably been to Japan 5 times in the last 15 years or something like that. So fairly often. And you know, what else? So you do it for when we go down to Mexico or whatever too. Yeah, just the concept that you're planning it all and then it's just a whirlwind executing it at the end, I think fits it to a T for sure. That part of it is really cool.
Yeah, I played it with my brother and he said it's a very long setup to get to the game, which is just telling each other about your trip.
Right. And hopefully learning about, you know, cool new things you could do if you actually go to Japan. More about the basics. It's a fairly short game too, right? Like it's like, what, 45 minutes, I think the box says. It's sort of like a beefed up Seven Wonders, kind of, if you think about it. It's definitely got the drafting. It's definitely got the tableau building, but there's just a bit more structure to it, a bit more. It's not just your typical pass the deck around and play one card sort of thing.
Well, you're only ever taking two or four cards at a time. So it's either take two, keep one, or take four, keep two. And the one of the key things here is so the card you don't take, you pass to either of your neighbors, and that sort of sits in a little pile, and then at various points, you get to pick up the pile that's in front of you and look through those cards, which was an interesting mechanic. I don't know that it necessarily adds a lot. It's a degree of interaction going back and forth, but I never really gave it a lot of thought what I was giving to other players, I would say. But it does keep you all sort of interacting in a light way.
I will say that mechanism makes a huge difference with two players, where drafting with two players often sort of breaks down because the zero-sum nature of it means that like there's a lot more hate drafting happening.
Yeah,
and here there's always new cards coming in, and so it becomes like the what are you doing? How can I not give you the card you need is very secondary, like you said, but it really elevates the two-player game. Of
things. You might get the same card getting passed back and forth because neither of you want to go to that cat cafe. No, we don't want to.
Yeah, and I suppose it is different from Seven Wonders in the sense that, like, we have to deal with cards from two different decks, right? We have to deal with cards from Tokyo and Kyoto very, very explicitly in about half of the rounds. You have to get a card from each. So I can't really see how you would enable that in a more traditional Seven Wonders style draft. Maybe you have, like, eight cards and you, like, pre-seed them with Tokyo and Kyoto decks. I'm sure that they tried all that stuff in playtesting, right? But that could easily shift one way to another. And part of me is gripes at the structure of this game because it's a bit confusing. Like following
it's a little
this,
needlessly convoluted.
Yeah, I definitely screwed up. Let's just say I definitely screwed up.
Sure.
Yeah, and like maybe by the second or third time you play, you get the sort of the flow of it because. Like, even with these symbols where it says, pick up four cards, it's like, well, I pick up four cards. What do I do with them? I guess you have to play. You're always playing half of the cards you get, right? Whether you pick up two and get one or you pick up four and put down two, you're always placing two half of the cards and then passing half of the cards.
It's like one round, this round you're drawing two cards, keeping one. This round you're drawing the two cards in front of you. This round you're drawing four cards and passing two. This round you're drawing one from each deck. It just changes every round. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's just that the game is so streamlined. Like it's an incredibly streamlined game that flows very smoothly. You draw your cards, you keep one, you pass one along, right? But because of that, you often forget to move the round tracker. It's so streamlined that I think it would just have been better to just keep the same structure over the course of the game, right? Rather than flipping back and forth to keep it a little smoother. But yeah.
If it was smoother, like I think this game would go into like gateway game territory. Like if it was more regular, I feel it could go into like Ticket to Ride universe. You know, similarly, you're sort of making a trip, right? You're planning.
I think it's definitely still there. It's just that you need someone to sort of guide you, like to interpret that little round tracker board. Otherwise, it can be a little overwhelming for new players.
You sort of need a game master to go. All right, this round we're doing
a tour
this.
Guide.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
a tour
right.
Guide. That's good.
Yeah, for sure. Otherwise, shall we talk a little bit about the components?
Yeah.
So, I got the Kickstarter Deluxe Edition. Amanda, I imagine you got the same. Whatever the Kickstarter is, all the same. So it comes with obviously some really like nicely put together wooden tokens, and they have a little bit of heft to them. I really like this this wood style; like it almost feels acrylic, but the paint job is really good. The colors are really vibrant, and there's just only a little bit of fading on some of them, and I imagine that might even be part of the graphic design. But this is a really like lush production. There's little baggies in the that hold all the components. There's lots of bonuses, like there's these postcards that reuse some of the artwork from the game. Even the score pad.
There's sticker sheets, washi tape.
The score pad is in this like little booklet
that has the Japanese travel journals. That was a nice touch. Yeah.
Yeah. So thematically, it's really on point. I kind of feel like they maybe almost overdid it in how
maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Like some of these components, like, oh, come on, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Is the ceramic token balls, quote unquote?
I have to correct you there. I'm pretty sure it's a typo. What it meant to say was snack balls.
Yeah, right. Exactly. They're so small for snacks, though.
Well, you got to get the good imported Japanese snacks, right?
Yeah, like those rice crackers or something.
Right, those little chocolate mushrooms or whatever that they have. Yeah, it's really cute that way, and it looks like they just like hired some Japanese ceramic rice bowl makers to make those, and it shows they're really high quality. So I'll just say that, like, I like the extra touches, but it's almost a bit much. Like, I wonder what the basic edition is going to look if there is one.
The wooden tokens, like those tokens, you use so infrequently. Some of them, especially like the wild tokens, you might collect one or two, and then you cash them in at the very end of the game. It's not a token that you're passing back and forth or getting a whole bunch of, right? So that felt a little unnecessary. They are very nice for what they are, like, yeah. they're lovely tokens to play with. But yeah, not completely necessary. I think the retail version of this would be perfectly adequate.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's not like Quacks of Quedlinburg, where you're literally touching and fondling the pieces like every second of the game. You're mostly holding the cards. Well, let's talk about the cards themselves.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to get to next.
Giant. Yeah. They're like really
so huge, and there's so many of them.
Right, so many of them. Well, there's literally two decks. That's not including the mini expansions or whatever that are in the game as well. And I feel like the whole purpose of the giant card is for the artwork, right?
Which is nice. Information, yeah. There's a lot of flavor text in there too. Because I was looking through some of the designer notes, sorry, the designer diaries, and Josh had said that this originally was designed as a roll and write game, but it was shifted to a card based game, largely so you could have all that information on the cards and like give more flavor and the pictures and everything. And I think that's one of the big benefits to this game is that there is so much flavor. Every one of these, I mean, they're not all unique. There are a couple of duplicates, but there is a lot of variety in there regardless. So they've all got these beautiful sort of almost like watercolory illustrations from a variety of artists. You've got a bit of flavor text there, like including some like pronunciation guides, which helps me personally. Yeah, so yeah, a lot of information there to sort of draw you into that world.
I think that part of it is really well done. I was a little bit because my heritage is Japanese, and my wife and I, my family visit Japan so often that I was a little bit concerned that, you know, the artwork could go, you know, one of two ways, right? It could be really good or it could be really kind of, sort of cringe. But it seems like the artwork, although very like stereotypical, is pretty darn well done. And I think most of it is quite respectful. Like there's not too much over the top stuff. And some of it's just like highly researched, very effective representations of real things you can go and visit. Sort of the highlights of Tokyo and Kyoto, certainly in Japan. And they have like a little, like maybe like magic cards worth of flavor text on each. So not very deep, but it's nice, right? Someone took a real effort to research this material and it shows.
And you really leave the game wanting to go to Japan.
Oh, like absolutely!
It's undeniable.
To go to there. Yeah, I would say yeah. I was a little concerned when I first saw this game on Kickstarter. The board gaming hobby doesn't have a great history with sort of cultural tourism and Orientalism and sort of othering, these sorts of themes. I wanted to get your perspective, Mark, and from my perspective, it does definitely seem like a very respectful, well-researched, culturally sensitive depiction.
Yeah, I think I would say, I mean, I'm not the sole owner of this topic or whatever, but, you know, I guess just one consideration is that this is literally for tourists, right? This is for non-Japanese people. So that's a perspective, right? Mm. And so it totally makes sense that a non-Japanese person would produce a game like this, because maybe a Japanese person from Japan couldn't produce it because they wouldn't have the sort of lens
external of perspective
from the outside. Right. So that part of it is really well done. But like some of the touches they could have done was, I'm looking at sort of the, you know, on the box art, like the side, what typically happens is when this sort of artwork of backdrops of Japan gets put up on things like an episode of Simpsons or whatnot, is like all the foreign signs or whatever that have Japanese writing on those are all like jokes. Those are just like in jokes or strangely translated things in the background, or like Cyberpunk, right? Like Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah, like, that's a bad example of Orientalism in pop culture, I guess.
It's super, super cringe. But, you know, all the stuff in the backgrounds of these cards are just writing. It's just like, that's actually, it's just saying, hey, here's a tea house and here's like a shop and here's a record store.
It's all very whatever. Grounded.
Yeah, so they don't take the bait. They don't do any of that hyper cringy stuff. It just seems like really kind of respectful and on point.
Excellent. Cool. So let's. One thing I want to talk about was one mechanic here is the go for a walk. You're drafting cards. Say you take two cards and you're gonna keep one, pass it along. Oh, you've got a cat too. There you go. Cat club. So instead of putting that card into your tableau, you can instead choose to go for a walk, which is you basically discard that card and then draw a different card face down and place it face down into your itinerary. And you don't actually get to know what it is. Like, you know it's in Kyoto or Tokyo, but it's only at the very end of the game when you're executing your trip that you get to flip it over and discover what it is and whether you're going to keep it. With it, which side you're going to keep it on, basically, because you can keep it on the go for a walk side, which is a couple of points guaranteed, or you might get some other points on the other side. And that adds a bit of flexibility to like get to your points and your combos, obviously. But I think that was one of the coolest thematic touches in terms of going for a trip, leaving an opening in your itinerary. It's like, well, let's leave the afternoon free. We'll go for a wander around town. We'll see what we find, right? And that sense of discoverability, I think, came across really well just through that thematic implementation there.
Yeah,
it was a nice concept, and that sort of leads into another mechanic that's really important. Is there's sort of like happiness, and then there's sort of like a stress meter.
Mm.
So yeah, I think you're right. It's called the mood tracker, and you can get positive on that track for a couple of reasons. Like, one of them is regaining energy or something like that, and one of them is like positive money, like you save money or something like that. And the other one is supposed to be like, this is really expensive, and that makes you feel bad, or this is really stressful and it makes you feel bad. And I like how in a lot of games they would be like, oh, this is like a binary, right? This is like a spectrum. It's like you're either happy or you're either sad. But this one lets you actually be both. You're a certain degree of happiness and you're a certain degree of stress, and you can track those separately. And I thought that was a perfect encapsulation of Japan or travel or any sort of like urban travel, right? It's like there's so much you want to do, so much cool things you're seeing, so many things that energize you, and then so many other things that are just like draining you, and you feel like a wasted pool of ooze at the end of your day because you've like walked 30 kilometers in a day or whatnot.
And like, and you good, largely
And the good moments don't erase the stress of running around, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. You
know. That was really cool touch. Like, you've got the balance. Like, there's the central tracker which you're trying to balance. But if you have a particularly bad memory or a particularly good memory, that's going to leave an impact, right? Like, you don't. It doesn't. A lot of having a lot of fun on the trip doesn't negate that you had that one bad experience sometimes. So that again, another fun little thematic implementation there.
Yeah, and because you have to like actually advance or regress on the mood tracker like multiple times before you sort of elevate to the next tier of point gain or point loss, you actually have to be really strategic about how to sequence those mood boosts or losses, because theoretically you can have a dozen mood shifts and end up being neutral by the end of the game.
Yeah.
End up gaining nothing. Or you could be really strategic and like boost it up to happiness level 20 points or whatnot, which I was able to do on one of the games just because I managed to luck out on some multiples of those. So it's a really cool system that I'd like to explore a little bit more, I think.
It can take some time to sit there and try and calculate, well, if I'm going to bump up 2 positive and down 2 negative and try to time that out, it can take a bit of time. You can just wing it. Like, I think largely the game is better when you just wing it a little bit and don't try and overthink that, but you could absolutely sit there and try and run through the execution of your trip in advance, which could, I don't know, it's a little fiddly in that sense. I think this game is best when you just lean into the theme, go with the flow, and don't overthink it too much.
Yeah. On that point, I'd like to cycle it back a little bit into like the sort of like the basics of what you're doing. You know, Amanda, you gave a good overview of basically what you're doing. You got the 6 days that you're trying to plan out, but over the course of the game, you're drafting from either 2 cards or 4 cards, and you're placing half of those down. And basically, you don't have to place them in the order of the days.
Each round. You're not doing the trip. Yeah,
exactly. So you can put down what you're doing on Thursday, and then you can plan what you're doing on Tuesday, and then you can plan what you're doing on Friday and then Monday. The cards that you place and when you jump between Tokyo and Kyoto, you're kind of sequencing. You're kind of sequencing it out over the course of the game, but you only execute it at the end. So there's a nice tension between wanting to fill some of those days up and lock them down, because effectively, once you reach 3 sort of activities in a day, the game's locked up, right?
And you get a little bonus too on that day.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a sort of a bonus evaluation which happens. And that part of it, I don't know. It was nice. It was a nice touch, this little bonus evaluation. But it was a little bit confusing because most of the time you don't execute any of the changes, like the mood shift, until the end of the game. So that part of it was a little bit different. We often forget to do that as well.
Because you're expected to do everything at the end, you often forget to do that little bonus in the middle of the game.
Yeah. Or you take the mood bonus and you're like, wait, why am I not in the center? I should start in the center. And you go back. Yeah, I feel that for everything else being as streamlined as it is, that feels like it was added afterwards, because I assume because people were like, well, I don't feel like I'm doing anything during the drafting. Or people were like putting an extra card on the days that are supposed to be locked out, so you have to have a trigger that people remember this day is long. But it feels like a bit of an add-on that breaks a lot of the rules of the rest of the game.
Right. You know? And the other thing that really broke the rules is sort of what you were talking about before, Daniel, is the walk. It's like there's sort of like 2 ways to do a walk. There's like the regular walk.
Yeah.
Where you get like, a research token. And you get, which gives you the ability to sort of like view more cards, which everyone wants. So that part's really nice. But you're sort of playing a gamble because you don't know what card you're going to get at the end of the game. Luck of the
draw, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the regular walk. That's fine. That's understood. That's cool. But then there's the extra walk that you can gain as part of that bonus evaluation when you put your 3rd activity in a given day. And that one, like, it works half of the same as the regular walk, but not. Like, you don't gain extra research.
Yeah, thematically, I don't entirely understand. You're, like, squeezing in extra time in the day to add a 4th card that for a walk, a little random bonus. Again, yeah, thematically, it doesn't work quite as well.
You get that bonus if you, like, because each day has a specialty kind of thing. Like, oh, this day would be great to go eat food for some reason. And so if you get all cards matching that thing, it, to me, that represents, oh, that was such a great day that, like, I feel energized at the end of it. Let's go for a walk in the evening and just crashing at home. Exactly. So I thought that worked for me, at least.
Nice. Everyone's got their own headcanon of how their day is going. No, that's really cool.
I think it's a good tangent to get into the fact that, just talking about the general strategy of this game, that I didn't find it entirely satisfying, I will say. Like, thematically, it works really well. Just in terms of, I found it was a little too, not easy, but not much friction, getting back to that discussion. In terms, like, of all the games I played, I don't think anyone ever didn't get all of their end of day bonuses. Largely, it was like everyone was always getting the bottom, the end of day bonus, the bottom card of each day. You get a little bonus scoring if you have X and Y symbols, and everyone got all of those. So there was never really this compromise or friction in terms of what choice you're going to make. It was always a little too easy to maximize everything. I mean, some players can definitely play this game and not really don't overthink it. Just some people will just take the card that is more thematically engaging. Like, going to the cat cafe doesn't fit my symbols, but I just want to take that card because it looks cool, right? But if you do want to lean into that sort of mechanical puzzle of it, I didn't find the puzzle super engaging in terms of being a little too simple to just, well, match the symbols on this day, right? It's either match the symbols or just luck of the draw. Right, so the balance wasn't quite there. I just was looking for a little more friction in that puzzle.
So if I may just present the exact same thing you said, but from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think that, to me, what that represents is that a game can be played at multiple different levels of engagement, of strategizing. You can just say, I'm going to, like, I need to have a Tokyo part and a Kyoto part. I'm going to match the icons and leave it at that, and then see what happens with the rest. You can start calculating how many of each of the five icons for the set collection you have, because the more you have of a thing, the more points it gives you. You can start calculating how you rank the mood cards to maximize the bonuses. And you can start calculating a lot of different things, how to maximize, because a lot of the highlights of the day will tell you, it gives you 3 points for every X before. And so there's a lot of that. And you can decide to consider or not each of those things, which means that you can play this with someone who just considers the first level of heuristics, and you can play with someone who's really going to, you know, try to math out what everything is going to be and what else am I, and like, oh, I can see that in the pile that I'm going to draw next turn, there's 4 Kyoto cards. I really have to be careful about that. And it really meets you where you are at. Mm-hmm. Is what I found about this game. And because there's no, like in Seven Wonders, cost to playing a card, the question is this card going to help me a little or a lot? Which I agree with you is not tension. But there is a huge difference, and this card is going to give me 5 points, this card is going to give me 22, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you can treat it like that, but then it gets to the point where you're just sitting there mathing out the cards. Well, going to the sake factory gets me 4 points, but going to the cat cafe gets me 6 points. And I didn't like at that point when you're just mathing it out. That I didn't find that engaging either. So I think this game just generally works better when you're not overthinking the strategy, just leaning into it as a thematic experience, almost like a semi role playing experience in terms of narrating your trip and leaning into those thematic elements. I mean, I'm always been a big advocate for games where you forget the point is to win. Right? Like Castles of Mad King Ludwig, or even Agricola, where you're like focused on building your perfect little farm. And oh, that's right, I'm like, pigs give you points. I just wanted to collect pigs because it's cute, right? And this game can definitely lean into that side of gaming, if you can appreciate that.
If I may describe what the two of you are saying from another third perspective. No, I really like this dialogue. I think you're right. You know, your initial point, Daniel, that this game doesn't offer a lot of friction at the start when you're starting to plan. And that's sort of good because that fits the narrative, right? It's like, of course, when you're planning a trip, anything's possible because you have unlimited budget and you have unlimited time. But once you start filling out the days, then it starts to get crunchy, right? Like by two thirds into the number of rounds, say at the end of the second phase out of three, then your days are starting to fill up and you have only so many spots. And if you are even, you know, trying to maximize things, you aren't quite sure if you're going to be able to find the right card to make the right symbol slot in so that you could boost the bonus points for that given activity category, like dining. We didn't talk about how on the player board there's a tier at which point, you know, you advance one of the categories up to a certain point, you get bonus points.
Yeah.
So maximizing those is another little mini game or consideration that comes in. So I thought there was actually a really nice degree of ramping tension closer to the end of the game. Absolutely. And as a result, most of it is sort of light and breezy. The first two thirds is very gentle. And I happen to play this game exclusively with kids. I played this with my oldest child, who's 12, and a couple of neighbor kids who are around. So I played exclusively with 12-year-olds and younger. And my 12-year-old is pretty into strategic games. And we had a nice kind of like rivalry going up. We were butting heads and trying to maximize our points. And that part of it worked really well. But playing with the other neighbor kids, they were just a little bit more uneasy, a little uncertain, but they got into it. But I think that ease of that little light ramp of easing into the challenge and the friction coming on board later on, I think is actually nice, probably intentional. And I think that gentle approach is welcome for some audiences, perhaps not for, you know, core gamers. But, you know, whoever's listening, watching our stream right now knows kind of who you are, if you fit into that category or not. And maybe you could use this game to introduce some of these concepts to, you know, non-gamers or casual gamers, and they would get something really nice out of it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me, like AEG, the whole appeal of AEG games are fairly simple, accessible games that do have quite a bit of bite to the challenge. Like even something like Cascadia, in the overlapping scoring conditions, accessible but still having quite a bit of challenge there if you want to dig into it. And this doesn't quite get to that level of some of those AEG classics. But as a thematic implementation experience, and just, yeah, sitting around the table chatting, and lots of great discussion points in this game. Just not icebreakers, but the points to just start having a conversation about if you do want to travel, for example, I think this would be a great starting point.
Yeah, this is a lighter game. I think this is not like Twilight Imperium, certainly. So nobody should go into this game expecting that. I feel like it's a light to medium game, or even like a filler game because it's so short. Very much along the lines of Seven Wonders, I feel like, base game without any of the expansions. And it fits that sort of mold. It's perfectly pleasant, really nice to look at, a feast for the eyes. So for that reason, I'm fairly positive on it. Although I don't think it will be the be-all, end-all game that I'll play every week and try and get good at. I don't think it has that depth or quality to that. But I'm not giving that as a knock. I think this type of game, you know, has a place. And I think people looking for that will really enjoy it.
I mean, having a thematic hook is like one of the big ways of bringing new people into the hobby. And I think this is a good one of those.
Certainly.
Do we want to dig into the include expansions a little bit?
Yeah, I tried both of those. What did you think of them?
I quite like them, and I don't. Unless I'm teaching the game to someone new, I am always including those in every play we do. To me, they solve a little bit of that the game gets a little bit not repetitive, but the set collection, the objectives are always the same, and they add a little bit more variety to the high level of what you're doing.
Yeah, so the base game encourages you to basically do a little bit of everything. You like really focus on those day bonuses, right? Like doing food on Monday, doing shrines on Tuesday. Whereas both of these expansions have soft encouragements to specialize a little more. like Mark, you mentioned that those trackers, the experience trackers, you get points for like doubling down on one of those experience types. But I don't, this is the pacing of the game, I think, sort of defocuses that a little bit. That's not a word, but it just takes it discourages you from focusing on those on that part of the scoring over just doing a little bit of everything. Whereas the expansion sort of refocuses some of that bit of part of the scoring. So it doesn't go quite enough for me, but it is definitely in the right direction. So it's got the passport expansion, which adds a little bit of basically asymmetrical powers. It will give you each player a slight bonus. And then there's the day trip Sunday expansion, which will add an extra day, but there's only one card on that day, which will basically say on either side of, like, you say it's on Tuesday. I think the one I had was like ramen and beer going to Sapporo. And you stick it on Tuesday, and in either side, if you've got any food tokens, you get bonus points, basically.
Yeah.
So again, just focusing soft encouragements for specialization.
That's kind of cool. Yeah, I didn't play the expansion, so you guys are informing me of this. Yeah. So that's cool to hear. So is that basically it? There's like the extra day, and what's the other of the two expansions?
Passport. Yeah, which gives you asymmetric power. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. But I find that is enough to give you a reason to play the game a little bit differently every game. Like, this game I got, the last game I played, I got a card, a passport, which told me that I was extravagant. So the icon, the mood icon of something being too expensive was actually becoming a positive for me. And so it changes your perspective of the rest of the game, where suddenly those are good. And not only that, but the highlights that score for expensive icons then suddenly just double up on something you're already trying to do. So it opens up a lot of an extra level of strategizing about it, which I quite appreciate. Yeah.
You know what just came to mind recently is we covered a game not too long ago called Fit to Print.
Mm-hmm.
Which also is another, also AG, also a drafting game, and also a game where you're sort of like planning for something and then executing
it.
And I not only are those similarities kind of sort of striking me, but one of the complaints I had with that game is that there's a lot of sort of like multipliers and factors to consider. There's a lot of scoring considerations. It's just like you have to keep your positive mood balanced with your negative mood, and you have to like have this so many of this icon and touching that icon and this and that, and it's basically like you're this whole like accounting audit, IRS audit you have to do at the end of the game. And in this game, it just seems like much more smooth, like balancing all those scoring conditions. I don't know, maybe it's because it's isolated to like one day at a time. It just seems like to flow really gently, and it has so many of those nice qualities of Fit to Print, but it has way fewer of the frustrating kind of extra steps, fiddly steps that you have to take that Fit to Print have. So I think in that way, this is another success.
Excellent. Well, I think we're about talked this through. Any closing thoughts?
Start us off, Amanda.
I will say about this game, I really enjoyed it. We've played it, I think, 6 or 7 times by now. And we played with my brother, who borrowed it to go play with some of his friends. And so it's already in 2 months since we got it. It already got a lot of table time. The one negative I will say is this, like we said earlier, it's gorgeous, but the cards are enormous, which means it takes a large table if you play with, like, more than 2 or 3players.
And the player board as well, quite large and spread out.
Yeah. And so, but overall, it is a game that you can meet at whatever level of engagement you have in you, and come out with just a desire to go visit Japan. So that's all good, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think this game is not going to be for everyone, but is any game for everyone? I think this game is going to be really the perfect like game that gets played all the time for some groups, especially I think families, or alternatively, it could be a game that's in your collection that you pull out every 3 to 5 years before you take your trip to Japan. You know, it's like maybe it's just for the thematics of it, because it feels good. It feels apropos. The theme, I think, fits with the mechanisms really quite deftly. and the subject matter I just love. So no complaints there. I think I'm going to keep this in my collection and just have fun with my family before our next trip.
Excellent. To me, one tangent I quickly wanted to touch on is that it put me in mind of another game called Remember Our Trip, which is a really interesting companion in that it is about also a Japanese design, but it's after you go on a trip.
Yeah.
And it really touches on the communal elements of like reminiscing and like some of the shared memories and where someone like where two people might be remembering a trip differently. And that, those sort of clashing memories. And that was a really interesting thematic implementation that sort of complements this quite well. But it did get me thinking, Mark, you mentioned going on a trip as a family or with friends even, and trying to prioritize everyone's preferences. I think perhaps that was maybe a missed opportunity, like, and for more interaction in this game, you could maybe like look at trying to balance different demands of different people. Or maybe like even some like on your neighbors, like try like little shared bonuses with each of your neighbors, perhaps. And I think that'd be a cool touch that would draw a little bit more out of this, perhaps. Maybe for expansion or for if he lets go to a different city.
I think Those are great ideas. If you look at Seven Wonders being a relatively close comparison, you know, the base game is very basic when you look back on it.
Mm.
And the expansions like got really in depth and added some really cool hooks to give that game sort of the depth, epic sort of depth that it was looking for to match the subject matter. And I think this game doesn't have to be epic, but you're right. You could have a lot more player interaction that could give everyone a reason to compare stories or a reason to be, you know, look, doing this exercise together.
What I'm getting is we should play back-to-back Let's Go to Japan, where we plan our trip, then Tokaido, where we do the trip, and then Remember Our Trip, where we talk
I've got Yokohama back here somewhere. That'd be a good one.
Isn't there a Japanese game about riding the bus too? So we can have like the bus in there and then get some bits on rails. So we could have a whole Japan traveling game day.
Series. Yeah, there you go.
Nice.
Quick question to close this up. If Let's Go was to become a series, where What country or city would you like to see this go to?
Japan is top of the list for me, so no complaints there. But I think it would have to be somewhere like quite different, like maybe a whole different continent, like maybe like let's go to like Italy or something like that that has a totally different vibe to it. But you're totally right. The core mechanism could be expanded pretty well. Let's go to UK. Probably Italy for me, because it's got the same kind of blend of like, you know, old and new. It's got the arts, it's got the cuisine, it's got the scenery. You got the north and the ocean and the Mediterranean to the south. So yeah, I think that would be probably the best.
I like maybe call me a homer, but let's go to Canada. Sounds pretty cool. And you could present
go to Alberta and between Calgary and Edmonton.
Oh, but the flights between the cities have to be like half of your budget, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It would be a great way to address everyone's theory that going to Canada, you can hit like Vancouver and Toronto in the same day. And
it would probably work well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably. Yeah. But I was interested in the idea of like showing off. Right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, most of the East can be traveled by train. Like, even going down to Toronto is a few hours. Yeah, showing off like the different kind of how Quebec has different like architecture and culture that to Toronto, to Vancouver. And then there's a whole thing in the middle, which is less different. But, you know, we still can go there.
Personally, I think going to Australia would be fun, just because that's my personal point of reference, right? And in terms of being, I know that place. Like you could easily do Sydney and Melbourne or something like that, right? But I other than that, I'd probably pick like, I mean, where I personally would love to go to is like Finland or Scandinavia. So maybe something that'd be a fun one.
Interesting.
You just play some Uwe Rosenberg games, and you're right there. Also, in addition, like there could be more expansions within Japan. Like, it's a tiny country, but there's lots of different regions.
You add a different deck and, like, choose two cities each game or something like that.
or even zooming in, right? Just, like, on one city, like, doing the transit map of Tokyo alone would be its own
movie. Okay. What about, with all of the games getting IPs and stuff, what about, like, let's go to Asgard and let's do a Marvel reskin of this?
Nice, exactly. It's like the Infinity Gauntlet love letter, right? It's pretty much like that. Nice, I love it. Let's make it happen.
I mean, if you can bring more people into the hobby, right?
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Well, I think we'll leave it there. Does anyone have any other final thoughts?
Well, let's remind the folks again about Amanda's upcoming project. You said your Kickstarter is coming soon, or it's almost out, or where can people find that?
It's going to be on Kickstarter on May 28th is when we launch. The name of the game is Puppets in High Places, which is sort of a play on Friends in High Places. If that wasn't clear. And so I think we can put the link in the show notes. It's series of characters and stuff. and you can go to my blog at subsurfacegames.ca.
And you're on Twitter and Blue Sky, I believe?
I'm on Twitter. I'm less active on Twitter than I used to be. I'm a Subsurface Amy at both Twitter and Blue Sky.
And Mark, where can we find you?
I'm not very active on the social media, but I'm lurking there. So you can find me as OmniGamer Mark on Facebook and Instagram and Blue Sky as well. And how about yourself, Daniel?
Well, you can find me at Board Game Feast at Blue Sky, Instagram, and decreasingly Twitter. for the podcast, if you have any questions or comments on this episode or our next, you can email us at omnigamersclub@gmail.com.
Yep, or visit our website at omnigamers.club. Definitely love to hear your feedback about Let's Go to Japan or any of the future games we plan to be playing. So why don't we tell the folks what is next up on the menu?
Yeah, so we had a few options for next episode. I put up a little poll to see what interest there was. There's a few indie games. We might actually bounce between a couple of those. We're looking at Harold Halibut, the new sort of point-and-click, sort of almost like it looks like a claymation adventure game. And you mentioned earlier Botany Manor, which is a little puzzle deduction game. So of those, either of those, possibly both, we'll see when we get to that time.
Doubleheader.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks so much for joining us, Amanda.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it was so great to have you back.
Yeah.
It was a great cross-Canada discussion.
Yep.
And you're welcome back anytime you got some game inspiration or new projects to tell us about.
Of course. I'll take you up on that, though.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, and until next time, have a balanced diet of gaming.
Bye.
Cheers.